This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There'll be a very special moment happening at the upcoming Traverse City Film Festival. The legendary producer, director, screenwriter, actor Roger Corman is getting the Michigan Filmmaker Award. The man known as the king of the cult film, the king of B-movies, is not only one of the most prolific producers in movie history, he also knows how to turn a buck. Only a tiny number of his more than 400 films haven't turned a profit. In 2009, he was honored with an Academy Award for Lifetime Achievement. Roger Corman will sit down for a conversation with Michael Moore August 2nd at the Traverse City Film Festival. But right now, it is a great pleasure to say, Roger Corman, welcome to Stateside and welcome back to the airwaves of Michigan.
Well, I'm very happy to be connected to Michigan again. I was born in Detroit and spent my early childhood there. I remember it with fond memories.
Yes, I'm wondering, how long did you live in Detroit, Roger?
Let me see. I left in 1940, and I was born in 26, so I spent 14 years in Detroit.
Where did you live, and what do you remember about that area?
I remember that I lived near the 6 Mile Road. I don't know if you know Bob Shea, but he was the president of New Line, and a director, Curtis Hanson, who started with me, made a picture called 8 Mile with Eminem, portraying the 8 Mile Road as a slum area. And Bob was saying he grew up near the 7 Mile Road, and he thought he was living in an affluent suburb. And I said, Bob, I'm in worse shape than you are. I grew up through near the 6 Mile Road, and I thought we were in a nice area.
Were you East Side or West Side kid?
West Side, I would think. It was so long ago that I barely remember. Let's say West Side.
We'll say West Side. If you were west of Woodward, then you were West Side. I certainly know that area well. I went to the University of Detroit right there at McNichols and Livernois, so I certainly know that area. And then you moved to Beverly Hills, and you studied engineering at Stanford. And is this true, Roger Corman, you worked all of 3 days as an engineer?
Oh, I work more than that. I work 4 days. I started on Monday, and on Thursday, I went into the personnel office and said, this is a terrible mistake.
I bet that went down really well at home. Your father was an engineer, wasn't he?
Yes, and I originally thought that I wanted to follow in his footsteps and studied engineering, but I became the film critic for the Stanford Daily, and that changed my career direction.
And thus you are echoing the story, I'm sure, in countless homes around the world when a youngster gets bitten by the film bug and parents are throwing up their hands in horror. You quit to work as a messenger for 20th Century Fox?
Yes, I was the failure of the Stanford engineering class that year. I got the worst job, $32.50, riding a bike around the Fox lot delivering the mail.
How did you parlay that into producing?
At that time, production was 6 days a week, and the offices worked five, and I offered to volunteer to work the 6 day for nothing if I could work on a set. But that accomplished two things. It taught me a little bit about looking around and seeing how films were made, and the administration thought I was an eager guy, and I finally got a promotion to the story department as a reader, just reading scripts and giving comments on them.
And then?
Then one thing led to another, and I went to England to study literature at Oxford, came back and wrote a screenplay called The House in the Sea, and sold the script to a low-budget producer, Bill Broidy. And again, I volunteered to work for nothing as his assistant if I could get a credit as associate producer. And he said, sure, because credits are very important in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I was able to say officially I was a writer-producer, and I took the money from the sale of the script, borrowed some money from some friends of mine, and I think I had $12,000 in cash, and produced my first film.
And was that Highway Dragnet in 1954?
Highway Dragnet was a script I sold. I called it The House in the Sea because it was a thriller laid in a house by the Salton Sea, which is overflowing its banks, and they changed the title to Highway Dragnet, really, because Dragnet was a popular TV show. I was always upset by the change in title, but I understood what they were doing.
And then it wasn't long before you actually began directing in 1955 with Five Guns West, and you went on to direct over 50 films, and you had no formal training there.
No, I learned on the job, which is the way most directors did at that time. There were only a few film schools. Now there are many good film schools, and most of the new directors have gone to film school. But we learned as we worked.
And you spent your career turning out these hundreds of B-movies and cult classics on incredibly low budgets. In fact, I'm sure the budget for one of those films wouldn't cover the craft services tab for some of those huge budget films. It certainly seems like circumstances forced you into that, but then did it become a decision of, well, hey, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Yes. Essentially, the films were working, and I financed my films with my own money. And since I don't have these giant amounts of money, this means that I'm forced to make low-budget and occasionally medium-budget films.
And it certainly has worked. Why do you think, Roger Corman, that audiences keep coming back for Roger Corman films and have so for 60 years?
Well, I don't know if they come back specifically to Roger Corman films. I think it's the type of film. I was one of a number of people when I started in the late 50s and really sort of hit my stride in the 60s. We were making low-budget, independent films about subjects that the audiences wanted. The major studios were tied to a certain type of film, and they were ignoring the fact that the audience was young. They would have major stars, a 50-year-old leading man making love to a 40-year-old leading lady, and I was having 19 and 20-year-old leads like Jack Nicholson and so forth in my films, and it wasn't just me. A number of my compatriots were tapping what was really the youth market.
It has been said, Roger Corman, it would be easier to list all the creative people in Hollywood who didn't get their start with you than those who did. And I'm looking at the directors who got their start working with you, and we see names like James Cameron and Coppola and Scorsese and Ron Howard, among many others. Was there ever a part of you through the years who looks at something big like Ron Howard's Apollo 13, big, big budget, big, big film, and did you ever think, maybe I should try one of those?
The thought occurred to me, but essentially I hit a groove that I was happy with, and I did make a couple of slightly bigger budget films, and they actually did fairly well. I made them for major studios, but there's a certain bureaucracy and weight in making a film for a major studio. You can be in what is called development hell for years before the picture gets made, whereas if I work for myself, I get an idea, I hire the writer the next day, and if things are going well, I'm shooting maybe 4, 5, 6 weeks later.
Yeah, and you did it quickly. My understanding is Little Shop of Horrors was in less than 3 days.
Yeah, 2 days and a night.
Wow. You mentioned a young Jack Nicholson, and it leads me to review the list of these unknowns that you hired. Nicholson, De Niro, William Shatner, Sylvester Stallone, and Sandra Bullock, so many. Was there something that linked those unknowns that kind of hinted at their future stature?
Yes. I simply felt that they were talented. I have a number of ways in which I audition, which is a traditional way of simply discussing the role and the background of the actor. But also I work with a lot of improvisations because I never had any training as an actor. I actually studied method acting at one time just to learn something about the actor's craft. And I put a lot of faith in improvisations, and I learn a lot about the actor from that, and you're able pretty much, not always, but pretty much you're able to learn a great deal about a person's ability through that. Not everybody, of course, I signed did well, but a surprising number of them did.
I'm speaking with producer, director, screenwriter, and actor Roger Corman, who will be receiving the Michigan Filmmaker Award soon at this year's Traverse City Film Festival. And Roger, I'm sure you're aware there are filmmakers and actors and writers and producers here in Michigan who had really hoped that this state would grow a thriving film industry when Michigan launched its film incentive program. And Governor Snyder recently signed legislation that killed off that program. That was something he said he wanted to do when he was running for governor. People who want to make films or find work in films in Michigan are feeling pretty much cut off at the knees. Can these people, do you think, build a film career here in this state without the state incentives, or would they have to leave Michigan?
It's difficult. Without the incentive, it's difficult to build the infrastructure, as it were, of films. However, because of the use of digital equipment, lightweight, portable equipment, you can shoot a film on location. So Michigan, as in other areas, will be places where independents can make every now and then an independent film, and a number of those will be springboards for people.
But it sounds like the idea of having a good, strong film industry in Michigan, it can't happen without the incentives because there's other states doing them.
Yes, I wouldn't say it can't happen, but I'd say it's difficult. For instance, why was Breaking Bad shot in Albuquerque? There's no reason for that whatsoever, other than the fact that New Mexico was the first state to install tax rebates and subsidies for films. And if you noticed, how many films and TV shows suddenly are shot in New Orleans? Simply Louisiana was one of the states that followed very quickly.
North Carolina, I know Vancouver, a lot of action out there too.
Yes, Canada in particular, the three major centers, Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal, are benefiting greatly from the Canadian subsidies and also the weakness of the Canadian dollar.
I'm wondering, Roger, how do you feel your early years in Michigan, just being kind of a Michigander from the word go, how did that influence you and your filmmaking?
I think it really taught me something about basic America. Michigan is vaguely on the eastern end of the Midwest, and I do think there's an understanding of the basic traditions, thoughts, and culture of the United States. So when it was something of a culture shock when I moved with my family, of course, from Detroit to Beverly Hills, but I think the combination of growing up in Detroit and learning certain basic values, and then going to the, you could say, somewhere between sophistication and superficiality, depending on how you want to say it, of Beverly Hills, gave me a unique background.
Roger, you have two films in the pipeline, at least according to the Internet Movie Database, and Cobrigator was released earlier in July. You're 89. Did you expect to be still turning out films more than 60 years after that first one?
No, I wasn't even certain that I was going to remain in films, but essentially I simply came to love films. And I was having lunch with one of the guys, John Davison, who started with me, who went on to do, I think, RoboCop, Airplane, Starship Troopers, a lot of major films, and he's retired. And I was saying, John, I always think of you as one of the young guys, and now you're retired. Maybe it's time for me to retire. And he said a line that I'm going to use more than once. He said, "You're too old to retire."
The king of the cult film, Roger Corman, who will be receiving the Michigan Filmmaking Award at this year's Traverse City Film Festival. You can find out more on their website, traversecityfilmfest.org. Once again, congratulations on the award, and thank you so much, Roger Corman, for spending time with us today.
Thank you.